Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hello, everybody. We welcome you back to Close Up Talk Radio. Nice to have you with us today. We're excited because we're going to welcome back a guest who was with us last week and who's going to, he's actually doing a series of broadcasts with us on a rather fascinating subject wrapped around suicide in jails and prisons. If you heard the previous broadcast, you know our guest is really a very highly experienced man in this subject. His name is Dr. Anicero Daniel. He is a top-notch, highly sought-after forensic psychiatrist, and for over 40 years, he has presented a significant amount of work of his work focused on prison populations. He has extensive experience and expertise in correctional mental health and correctional psychiatry. To explain just a little bit, he has served as the director of psychiatric services by contract for the Missouri Department of Corrections for many, many years, and in that capacity, he directed and managed psychiatric services for over 25,000 offenders in 21 correctional centers in Missouri. Also, during part of that period, he was directly involved in mental health services, including crisis intervention, group and individual therapy, suicide risk assessment, and all aspects of multidisciplinary treatment of mentally ill offenders. He is an expert in suicide risk and suicide prevention in jails and prisons, and he also serves extensively as a prison suicide expert witness in crime, such in prison, not in prison, I'll get it out, in court trials. That is one of the things he is a big specialist in. So it's a real pleasure to welcome the doctor back with us again this week to continue this exploration. He has spent many, many hours and years studying this, and I want to point out he has a remarkable book that is about to be published. It is called Suicide in Jails and Prisons, Preventative and Legal Perspective, a Guide for Correctional Officers, Mental Health Staff, Experts, and Attorneys. It really is kind of like a textbook on the subject of suicide in jails and prisons. His name again is Dr. Anicero Daniel, and he's based in, that's a good question. Doctor, I'm not sure where you're based. Where is your home base? Go ahead. Welcome. Nice to have you back with us again.
Yeah, thank you for having me on your show. I appreciate it. And I am based in Columbia, Missouri.
That's right. I should have figured that. In any event, you know, it's kind of fascinating going through your book, which is amazing. The book opens in a first chapter, and it all goes into detail on suicidal ideations, attempts, methods, and theories. The who, what, how, and why of suicide attempts and suicides, basically in prisons and in jails. I am prompted to ask you, as a forensic psychiatrist, what is it that made you want to focus so heavily on the subject of suicide and prisons? I mean, you could be doing forensic psychiatry in almost any other subject anywhere. Why did you focus on this subject so heavily? How about that?
Yeah, basically, when I was working as the director of psychiatric services for the Missouri Department of Corrections, I was intrigued and fascinated by inmates who think about taking their lives. And I had the fortune of reviewing 37 inmates who killed themselves during a 10-year span between 1992 and 2002. And these inmates have shown certain specific characteristics which fascinated me, so I gathered all the data and published a paper suicides in correctional system between 1992 and 2002. The most important point is that about 60 to 90% of those individuals who take their lives have an identifiable psychiatric disorder. And that could be a depressive disorder or a more serious disorder known as major depressive disorder, anxiety disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, bipolar affective disorder, and substance abuse. These are the major diagnostic categories that I found shown by these inmates. But beyond that, there are certain specific characteristics, particularly inmates who come into jails. The first 72 hours to 7 days is the most high-risk period. Then I studied quite a bit about the phenomenon of suicide. I learned that the suicidal thoughts are transient. They do not last long. So if you intervene in that time frame when they have suicidal thoughts, you can avert or you can actually help the individuals turn away from such negative thinking and, in fact, lead a different path in their life. But the identification is the most important issue. So another important point that I learned that suicide, the inmates are a high risk for suicide. And that is not only in the United States, but in Europe and across the world. So I asked the question myself, why are they the high, one of the high risk groups? Basically because of incarceration, the type of crimes they have committed because of their mental illness, substance abuse. But one significant factor stood out, that is 60% of those individuals who make a suicide attempt or commit suicide, they have attempted suicide before. It could be during a previous incarceration or in the community. So I have learned, and it is well established as a fact, that a prior near lethal suicide attempt is the best predictor of suicide. So if the jails and prisons are not gathering data on this particular aspect of the inmate profile, they stand to lose that individual, and if they, in the event an inmate commits suicide, the family or the survivors can file a lawsuit, and one of the important aspects the attorneys look at is the profile of the individuals who took their lives, but specifically about the mental state, mental disorder diagnosis, and one that I have mentioned just now, prior suicide attempt. Let me also bring to the audience a particular piece of information. United States has the highest incarceration rate in the world. Basically, 4.4% of the world population live here, but 22% of the entire incarcerated population in the world is represented by those who are in U.S. jails and prisons. So that itself is an important distinguishing factor or fact, compared to the other incarcerated population in the rest of the world.
Why do you suppose that is? Any idea?
Yeah. Well, I, I think there are a number of factors here that if you historically, if you look at back in 1960s, in 1963, under President Kennedy, the mental health community mental health act was passed, which led to the deinstitutionalization of mentally ill into the community. In the 1970s, when I began my training and my work, I was consulting at a state hospital in Missouri. And the population of the state hospital before or in the 60s and before 1970 was approximately 60,000 patients. Today, the same hospital holds 450 patients who are basically involved in criminal offenses in relation to mental illness. So the point I'm making is that deinstitutionalization of the mentally ill from the state mental health, state mental hospitals have led to the large number of people in the community. And secondly, whenever somebody who a mentally ill person commits a crime, even for small offenses, they are being arrested and thrown in jail and later in prisons. In fact, the jails and prisons in the United States have become the de facto mental hospitals. 20% of those who are behind bars in our country suffers from a serious mental illness. And then second and another factor which I am answering to your question is that one of the potential factor is I think lately we are getting hard on people who commit crimes. We hardly ever use the diversion programs, even though there has been being carried out more often than in the past. Anyway.
Right. I understand. Let me ask you a simple question here. You've done so much research. Is there very much research on this subject, or is yours kind of the first deep dive into this subject? Because you've really gone extensively into this, a lot of interviews, a lot of examples in various aspects of how suicide is committed, why it's committed, how it's committed. You know, is there, I guess that's the real question here. Was there much of this kind of research before you started doing it? Or is this really the first, you know, lengthy missile that's been done on this?
Yeah. Well, I don't claim to be the first person who did it. There has been some research into the profile of the inmates who killed themselves. The research actually started in early 1980s, and there has been numerous papers published in this area. Well-known researchers from universities and correctional practitioners have done that. What my book is, how my book is different is that I am crystallizing or summarizing all of those early research and my own research into identification and monitoring of these inmates. Then what I have done is that I have learned considerably from the lawsuits I have consulted on, approximately 75 of them during the last 10, 15 years. And also there has been numerous cases in the judicial literature that I have I have depended on. So I have married, so to speak, the clinical side of suicide prevention to the legal decision making. Basically, what do the judges, particularly the federal court and the jury, they look at, what factors they look at, because the lawsuits are basically twofold. One is medical negligence, the other one is deliberate indifference lawsuits, meaning that the prisoners in our country have a constitutional right for adequate mental health care. If the system or a facility or a provider does not provide mental health care and medical care, adequate mental health and medical care, then the situation arises that could be a constitutional violation, because the prisoners have a constitutional right to receive adequate medical care, and if you do not provide such care, then the implication is that their rights have been violated. So
well, that's very go ahead. That's right. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
And what about your book?
Yeah, my book is basically connecting the dots between the steps the jails and prisons have taken and the services provided into the situation where the inmates' constitutional rights have been violated. For instance, there has been cases if the judges have considered if an inmate has not received adequate mental health care, or they received only a minimal care, not meeting the standards of the profession, then the legal decision basically takes a look at that particular component. Another important point that I want to bring up here is that the mental health needs and medical needs are what is known as, if they are serious enough, they are considered to be serious medical need. If the serious medical need of an offender or an inmate is not properly attended to, that can form the basis of constitutional violation. So the judges look at a very particular, or jury look at a very particular point in this regard. Did the offender or the inmate have a serious medical need? In our situation, suicidal vulnerability or tendency is considered to be a serious medical need. So when that need is known or identified, did the provider take steps to mitigate that risk? If they intentionally or consciously disregarded the inmate's serious medical need, that can constitute what is known as a constitutional violation. So large sums of money have been awarded to the survivors of the deceased in that kind of cases. That's where my role as an expert comes in. Go ahead.
Well, listen, this is, I mean, the study is so fascinating, and yet it's a subject we rarely hear talked about. I don't think most of us have any clue as to how serious a problem suicide is in prisons or jails. You hear about some famous person who has gone to prison and then committed suicide, but you know, those are few and far between that make news. How serious is this issue of suicide in jails and prisons, quite frankly? How would you answer that?
Yeah, let me put that in context. The suicide rate, which is calculated a number of cases per 100,000 of the population, the suicide rate in the community and the general public is 12 per 100,000, 12, 13 per 100,000. Suicide as of 2019, the latest year that data is available, is 46 per 100,000. That is a fourfold jump from the general community. In the state prisons, it is 1.5 times. It's about 18 per 100,000. In the federal prisons, it is somewhat lower. It's 10 per 100,000, lower than what we have in the general community. So
right.
If you look at these figures, it is a significant problem, particularly when it comes to jails and prisons.
All right. Well, that's very interesting. I think it's explainable as to why we don't hear about it, because it's not the kind of thing that makes general news. Listening to what you said in the outset, I gather that one of the main things that needs to be done to predict if somebody is going to attempt suicide when they go into jail in that first week is so critical, is that they should have a psychiatric examination. Would that be right? Is that the best way to tell if someone has suicidal tendencies?
Well, psychiatric evaluation is one component, but more importantly, what we call is the screening. If you take a look at a newspaper I think media news from Ohio in Cuyahoga County, which is Cleveland, $1.4 million were awarded to the family of a man who committed suicide. The basis for that award was lack of screening for suicidal ideation and suicidal thinking. So screening of incoming inmates is the most important step, and the screening should be done by a trained correctional officer or a mental health professional using an instrument which captures the best known risk factors. So the first step is screening.
Let me ask you one question before you go on. The screening is,
yeah.
How complex is that screening to do? I mean, is it a simple procedure, what does it involve?
Yeah, it basically involves a questionnaire, which has about, most of the questionnaires have 10 to 15 questions. Centers have up to 22 questions. The questions are something like this. Do you have a history of mental illness? Are you thinking about suicide now? Have you attempted suicide before? Are you on psychiatric medications? Have you had a recent hospitalization? Have you been treated for alcohol abuse or substance abuse? How recent was such treatment? As I mentioned before, have you had a suicide attempt before? So these kind of questions, it's about 10, 15 questions, which will capture all known risk factors that I have identified in my book. That will capture a person's potential risk for suicide. If such
and
a risk
think,
is, yeah.
Do you think someone who's just been arrested and is being presented with questions of this nature is going to answer honestly?
Probably not. No.
That's what I was going to say. I don't think so either. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, then that's one of the problems we as providers experience. We accept the denial of suicidal ideation and information surrounding such thoughts and behavior are taken at face value. So what I am recommending is that in beyond the screening, if there is some suspicion of concealment of such thoughts, mostly manifested by behavioral changes of agitation, anxiety, feelings of helplessness, even though they may deny suicidal ideation, we have to refer that person to a qualified mental health professional who will do a suicide risk assessment and gather all information about that particular inmate. So beyond screening is the suicide risk assessment by a qualified mental health professional. Then contemporaneous with that or along with that, we have to do a psychiatric evaluation. So gather all the information about the inmate, the criminal history, the history of incarceration, the suicidal thoughts, suicidal behaviors, past suicide attempt, psychiatric diagnosis, any kind of potential immediate, what we call dynamic risk factors, which means that whether the person has been withdrawing from alcohol or drugs, particularly heroin withdrawal, or in certain individuals, first-time arrestees, that's the most vulnerable group of people, particularly those individuals who are held in high esteem in the community, in the society. They occupy a particular status in the community. They pose a particular risk of suicide, as we know from reading news about these kind of conditions.
That's correct.
So taking my train of thought.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Doctor.
Yeah.
We're slowly running out of time here. I want to point out that one of the things you do extensively now is you serve as an expert witness in trials against, I guess, prisons, in states, organizations, that are housing prisoners, where families are suing because, a loved one of theirs was in prison and committed suicide in prison. How often do, what about the majority of those cases? Do those trials generally, are they found in favor of the prison, or are they found against them for the most part? How about that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Basically, most of these cases are settled out of court. In favor of the plaintiff. But if they go to trial, the chances are for the plaintiff to win is somewhat remote, because basically the defendants, particularly the jails and the prisons, they tend to win 4-1 in trials involving these cases. But sometimes the issues are obvious. They may have deviated from the standard of care. They may have interfered with the constitutional rights of these inmates, so often they settle the case out of court.
Well, that's really interesting. Dr. Daniel, it's really amazing talking to you, because this, again, is a subject that's rarely discussed, and there is so much here to talk about. And I'm so happy that you're doing a four-part series with us. Dr. Daniel is doing this series. He will be back 2 weeks from today and then a week after that. So we're going to have extended time to talk with Dr. Daniel to learn more about this. I'm fascinated by how you did your research, Doctor. It must have been really, really, really amazing to be involved with. But in any event, I want to point out that our guest again has been Dr. Anicero Daniel. He is a forensic psychiatrist. He's based in Columbia, Missouri. And he has a remarkable website. It is PrisonSuicideExpertWitness.com. PrisonSuicideExpertWitness.com. If you go there, you'll learn all about the doctor and about how he avails his services as an expert witness in prison trials, court trials, about prison inmates who have committed suicide. So, Dr. Daniel, we'll see you again in 2 weeks from today, same time at 2 o'clock Eastern, okay?
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate having the opportunity to talk with you.
You are very, very welcome, Doctor. Delight chatting with you, and I'm so glad you're doing this series. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
Well, that's it, folks. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.